cab drivers. Watch your cars.
Oh, welcome back to Action RC, the podcast series. You know the drill. We're talking about RC racing, both now and over the 40 years of its history. Today on the show, we're back down under, back in Australia, where we belong, home territory. And we're here with one of the very best from this country today. He's won a stack of national championships, 10 at last count, in electric off-road. He's done a bunch of other stuff as well. It's fair to say he's been the front-running driver in this country for most of the last decade. He's run some world champs. He's been at the Reedy race. He's been over in New Zealand for the nationals there. And of course, all over Australia. With his dad, Gary, he's now the host of a regular coaching clinic, passing on all that accumulated knowledge to young and beginning racers. And he's gearing up for the 2023 Electric Off-Road Worlds. Delighted to welcome to the show, Chris Sturdy. Chris, how are you?
I'm good, mate. How are you going today?
I'm just fine and dandy. I think I've got a bit of a croaky voice though, so hopefully people can still understand what I'm saying. We'll get there. Mate, it feels a little bit wrong to be asking you about to kind of reflect on your career because you're still a young fella. You're only 26 or 27, something like that. So it kind of feels a bit early to be asking you some of this, but it just feels like a great time to chat with you in the lead up to the Worlds and to reflect on, you know, what's been a pretty remarkable last few years. But let's start where I always start, which is in the beginning. So what's the origin story for you? Where did this kind of passion for RC racing come from? How'd you get started?
When I was 10, my dad got me into it. He used to race in the 80s. And then he's been around motorsport and I've grew up around motorsport my whole life. And then he took me down to Hobby Station down at Archer Field. I think I was about 10 at the time and just started racing casual and that and off-road and then a bit of on-road and then started to take me out to the other tracks around Southeast Queensland. And then, just kind of went from there and, became pretty much my whole life.
So I think that's first mention of Hobby Station on this show. It was a kind of a indoor-outdoor venue in Brisbane that was around for a few years, some pretty good indoor racing, a little outdoor track, and that's where you got started on that little outdoor track?
Yeah, I did a little bit in the off-road. Me and Dad and Racer, I remember they had around the outskirts like steel spikes with like the fishnet rope just barricading it. I just remember one time just plowing into it, just, you know, doing the old school with the B40 and I just tearing the front arm off and
just turned it into a canoe right there.
Yeah, pretty much. And then, one Christmas, Dad got me it was a TT01 Chinese copy for Christmas. And we started doing the on-road a little bit too.
It was a wonderful venue. Lasted a few years, and there were certainly some stellar races on that little indoor track. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
Indoor bitumen, some really good racing there in the day. So, just let's rewind for a second. Just tell me a little bit about your dad. And you said he'd started right back in the 1980s. I think there was a Tamiya Frog, but also that he'd been involved in full scale motorsport. So, tell me a little bit about. Just give me a little bit about his background that helps us fill in the pictures.
Yeah, so like I said, he was doing RC in the 80s. Yeah, his first car was the Tamiya Frog. And then I don't know too much about his racing career but I know he did some speedway stuff and then go-karting. And then he also did some racing in Formula Ford and Formula 3 as well. And then for quite a long time, he's just been a part-time mechanic for a few race teams in the Formula 3 and Formula 4.
Right. So he's got a good insight into what makes a race car tick, and that'll be important later on when we talk a bit about what you guys are doing.
Yeah.
So from those early days, your Hobby Station, you're kind of getting started, your TT01, you're messing around with buggies. Your dad's got a racing background, so I'm guessing it got pretty serious pretty quickly in terms of, you know, wasn't about bashing for you guys. It was actually about racing and kind of getting on with it.
Yeah, for me, it took a couple of years, but I competed at, I think it was the 2006 state titles at Leichhardt at Chargers. I was only, about a year into racing and race stock at the Queensland titles that year and then did the following state titles at Pine Hills when they held it. But for me, I probably didn't quite get serious with it until about end of 2008, 2009, running the 540 touring, mainly down at Bayside.
That's serious horsepower, Christopher.
Yeah.
540 touring, 540 motors, four-wheel drive touring car. What? So, I mean, it's an interesting class, and I jest. It, you know, was a mainstay class here, certainly in Queensland and in other parts of the world. But there's probably some lessons you learned even from that early age of driving a car with such limited horsepower. I mean, those things are so horsepower limited. What are the kinds of things do you think, you know, now thinking back over that as your starting point, that, you know, the habits that you might have learned in those early days?
I think probably the biggest thing I gained from doing those lower classes early on, especially the 540, because that was one of the main years I started to look at my consistency. And, you know, Dad being the motorsport background was, you know, constantly sort of keeping on top of my consistency. And, you know, one lap doesn't win the race. So it was a good category to kind of learn that because, you know, you had limited horsepower. So, you know, the cars weren't as erratic. But I know one big thing that I was doing back then that a few other races mentioned to me was braking. Like no one was using brakes in 540 touring because the cars weren't going fast enough, but I was using the brakes. So yeah, just sort of learning the brakes and building up the consistency in a lower category. I feel like it kind of made the transition easier the more I stepped up, just learning the basics in a slower category.
Yeah.
To then help develop further on.
So you talked there about consistency, and this is, I mean, it's probably something that I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that you and your dad use and gather and collect data, you know, as you're doing your racing and testing, like not too many other people that I've ever seen. And there we are, you know, you're a young fella running 540 touring cars and you're talking about consistency numbers, that is in a sense about data, and your dad pointing to the value of that data. So I want to dig back into that a little bit later on when we talk about what you're up to now, because that's, you know, that's probably something that I reckon you've learned in those early years and kind of get on with it. So 540 touring car, where do you go from there? You step up in horsepower classes after a couple of years. Is it still all mainly touring car at this stage? Or
yeah, it's mainly touring car for a couple of years, and we did a little bit of off-road here and there, but we pretty much did after Dad won the 540 titles in 2008. I stepped up in 2009, and focused on that, and Dad was putting more focus on me. And yeah, pretty much did all the local comps for that. And then after the state titles, we went up to 17.5 boosted. Back then it was its core before they went blinky. And yeah, that's when things started to get a little bit more, even more serious. There was, you know, some really quick local guys here in Queensland. And then that year we did our first interstate trip down to Adelaide.
Yeah. So I've got in my records that you won a state championship in Adelaide, kind of almost the other end of the country in, I think, 2010. That I think probably marks your first win outside Queensland.
Yeah.
And clearly by that stage, you've got a sense of, you know, I can drive a little bit, and your dad's kind of pushing things along, and you're starting to kind of make your way through through the field.
Yeah, that's when we sort of started to really sort of realize that, okay, well, you know, can obviously drive, and Dad's a, you know, brilliant mechanic, and we started to work more and more and start to try to find, you know, more and more time and work on myself and my driving. And yeah, the Adelaide trip was a big sort of, you know, it was an eye opener in a sense that, yeah, it was my first interstate trip. I was the only Queenslander there, and you know, racing against, you know, completely different people, you know, completely different track and just different atmosphere and everything else along with it.
I think in that same year, 2010, later in the year, you land in Bendigo for the Australian Championships. And I just want to kind of, you know, I just think this is a wonderful story. You finished second in stock touring, which is a, that's quite an achievement. You're beaten by Chris Piastri, Oscar's dad, and Oscar himself wins the 19-turner super stock 10.5 equivalent kind of class. He becomes national champion that year. Oscar, of course, now driving Formula One. So I just I think that's a, you know, kind of interesting story, the interaction there.
Yeah.
Did you ever have a serious look at full-scale, full-size motorsport, you know, with your dad having that background? You know, this kind of, you know, crossing paths with Oscar's making me wonder whether there was ever a chance of Chris Sturdy being a race car driver.
I kind of always pestered Dad about getting me into a go-kart. But, you know, the cost, you know, Dad had been through and everything else, the cost is obviously a massive, massive thing. And also I wasn't the most fittest kid and struggled a lot with that. So two things kind of just didn't gel. Whereas, you know, I was skilled at what I was doing and stuck with this and cheaper and safer.
Well, it's a little bit cheaper.
Definitely safer.
So really we're getting to a point now in your kind of career in the early teens where you're into modified. You're still running touring cars at this stage. You do some Queensland champs, but then you kind of start to look back to the off-road scene. What are some of the kind of markers around that, you know, really starting to get nationally competitive and to move into off-road? What was going on for you guys then?
In 2010, we did do the Queensland titles in off-road, all three classes.
That's right. Yeah.
Was able
in
to
the
win
stock classes. That's right.
Yeah. Yep. Was able to win all three in that. And then we still dabbled a little bit in the off-road, but the on-road was sort of our main focus. I was enjoying it more than off-road.
Yeah.
Dad always wanted to do the off-road. I always wanted to do the on-road. So we sort of just shared around, you know, one weekend we'd do off-road, next weekend do on-road.
Yeah.
But yeah, then 2011, we stepped up to modified for the first time. We did a little bit in 10.5 as well, as we had those two categories.
Yes.
But yeah, that's when we sort of started, you know, it was just another big step up. But the jump to modified didn't feel terribly steep, and we still did a bit of off-road, but we had a few cracks at the on-road with like the Queensland titles in modified and fell short in 2012. And then, we got in 2011, sorry, it was for the Queenslands. And then after the 2012 on-road Nats, we got offered a sponsorship through HEI with X-Ray Australia and decided to do a little bit of off-road. And we'd done through 2012 a little bit of Nitro Buggy.
Okay.
So that's what we started to venture into. And then we decided, oh, we got the 10th scale here. We'll go and do the nationals for at Mildura in 2013. While then starting to transition to do more 8 scale stuff in 2012 and 2013.
Yeah.
And then doing a bit more off-road and sort of transitioning out of on-road. I don't think I did an on-road meeting in 2013. I think it might have been one or so.
Yeah.
Pretty much just went full scale to off-road. Yeah.
So 2013, you go to the Nationals in Mildura and it's your first time. And I kind of want to stick with off-road a little bit now, electric off-road for the next little while, because that's really where you've made your mark.
Yeah.
And that's your first time on the podium. You run second there to Josh Payne in four-wheel drive. Payne has been on the show a little bit earlier. For anyone who's joined along with the Action RC podcast in recent weeks, well, firstly, welcome. Secondly, go back and find the Josh Payne episode. He is truly one of Australia's great characters. And at this point in time, particularly through that kind of era, was absolutely the front runner in electric off-road in Australia, has won a stack of nationals. What's it like to kind of switch over to off-road and to run into these kinds of legends, people like Josh Payne, Matt Griffin, Ari Barkley, Andrew Gillett, these kinds of, you know, who have become legends in the sport in Australia and well-known beyond. You're just a young fella and you kind of arrive, you know, in this category that you haven't spent a lot of time in and you've got to take on these guys. What's that like?
It's a little bit daunting, especially after, we didn't have the best of luck with two-wheel drive day. And it was very different for us. It was a really high grip track. We were going through tyres in 3 minutes and...
Oof.
It was just completely different, but the atmosphere just felt fun for the off-road. It was quite different, so it was quite, I don't know, it didn't really feel daunting in so to speak with all these different people around, and you know, back then, you know, I was young, a bit more naive. I didn't really know the history behind a lot of these guys. I'd mainly,
so they're just a bunch of old blokes, right, that you're just
yeah, kind of. No insult to Painty, but yeah. But, you know, we had spoken a little bit with Andrew Sebeggian and Ray Munday because they came up to Queensland at the end of 2012. That's kind of why we steered towards the off-road. And, but yeah, it was, you know, it was that whole thing of racing different people and learning off them. And, but yeah, I don't think I really took it as it was daunting.
No.
Really, we were just, you know, we've kind of just... we just went about things our own way and just kind of did our own thing. We were there to race and just, sort of just focus on ourselves. I didn't really worry about like who was who and, you know, who was this, because I didn't really know who most of the races were. So it didn't really feel like that.
Later on, we'll flip to the other end of generational change, because, you know, now you're still a young fella, but you're certainly one of the veterans now. And there's a bunch of young guys snapping at your heels. So we'll kind of flip this over a little bit later on. 2014 is really the breakthrough year. The Australian Nationals take place in Canberra, really almost one of the spiritual homes of off-road in Australia. They've hosted the Nationals there a bunch of times, five or six times. You take two classes, two-wheel drive modified for the first time. You just miss out on four-wheel and you win a spec truck class there as well. Chris, just, you know, reflect back. It's 9 years ago now.
Yeah.
You're still a young fella at that age. You're, what, 17 or something. What's it like to stand on the top step at a national championship event for you and for your dad who'd, you know, been on the journey with you?
Pretty hard to remember, but probably just like, you know, the realization, for sure, I was on victory lap in the A2 and just kind of going through the jump section in the middle of the track and just starting to really sort of feel it and the shivers, and I had the guys from Gold Coast cheering on, hear a guy call out "Whip it," and you know, that was sort of the sinking feeling, and just that feeling was, oh wow, like, you know, we missed out in 2010 at the on-road nationals, you know, one that we really sort of kicked ourselves about. So to finally kind of be able to get that, and as well from third on the grid as well, it was, I don't know whether it was just a relief, but also, it was just kind of a like, pinch yourself sort of moment, especially when we had some bad luck that year with two-wheel drive in New South Wales. So it was, it was kind of a bit of a relief, but kind of like a dream.
It's a curiosity to me that quite often when I ask that question of people about, you know, what was it like to kind of finally get that win?
Yeah.
Most often the word relief is what's used rather than exhilaration or excitement or, you know, wonderful, any of those sorts of things. There really is a sense of relief of, oh, at last, or, you know, thank goodness I didn't screw it up or whatever it might be.
It was kind of, we sort of had that feeling earlier in when we went to New South Wales for the state titles, because we pretty much been sort of banging our heads against a brick wall since the 2010 Nats. We kind of, you know, I was pretty much in a bit of a rut, and I was winless for 3 years. I just really struggled to get anywhere and was just constantly just behind the eight ball. So then the 2014 New South Wales four-wheel drive title was kind of the big relief.
Yeah, okay.
So then, the two-wheel drive one was just kind of a nationals relief, like, that was kind of just a redemption year for me, back to form. And, you know, that feeling of being on the top step again.
Let's talk a little bit about two-wheel drive in particular. So the next couple of years, 2015, you run into some unknown guy by the name of Kyle McBride who sweeps the Nationals. 2016, you don't get there. But from 2017 on, you're undefeated in two-wheel drive modified at Australian National Championship level. So you've not been beaten at a national. You know, the last time you didn't win was 2016 and you weren't there. So that makes four in a row. First time that's ever happened in Australia. What is it about two-wheel drive? You know, what's your approach to two-wheel drive and why does two-wheel drive click? Certainly in terms of what the results tell us. You know, what is it about two-wheel drive buggy that works for you?
To be honest, I always hated two-wheel drive growing up and learning, and even for years, I always preferred four-wheel drive because it was sort of closer to on-road because I'd spent so much time in that. But I think just the fact that two-wheel drive is all about finesse, and I kind of take myself as a very smooth driver. I'm not overly aggressive in how I drive. So I feel like the two-wheel drive just kind of fits my style quite well. The more I raced it, the more I started to enjoy it. And the more it's one of those classes where it really knocks you when you're having a hard time with a two-wheel drive. But when you get those race meetings where everything just clicks with the two-wheel drive, it's like the best feeling in the world. It's yeah, it's like endorphins going through, just giving you that warm fuzzy feeling when you're getting a tour drive around the track at high consistency and fast. It's just the best feeling out of all the off-road categories.
It's pretty special. I'm going to disagree because I love four wheel drive the most, but I hear what you're saying. And no, I know what you mean. Four times in a row, you've won that. Up until 2023, you'd not won four wheel drive. And finally, last year, kind of added the four wheel drive national championship to your tally. Yep. Firstly, how frustrating to kind of get, you know, you were so close on so many occasions. And then, you know, again, I guess the word might be relief about what happened last year.
Yeah. Definitely, it was a massive focus last year to get the four drive. It was, you know, as much as we wanted all three, if we could only have one last year, it was four drive. Mm-hmm. It was 100% that. We had, you know, struggled for a while, just being constantly on the podium, but never the top step, you know. You know, it's quite unlucky in 2018, and then 2019 sadly got rained out. I was so happy with the car in 2019 in practice and the first qualifying run before it rained. So, you know, it was, and then COVID hit. So it was an even longer wait. Like, it was just brutal to have that in the back of your head. But yeah, the relief to get it, was just, and the fact that I had to go down to an A3 as well. So it was, yeah, just, It was that sort of first national title feeling all over again.
Hmm. Yeah. So that race last year, 2023, it happened on home turf for you. You sweep all three classes, two wheel drive, four wheel drive, and truck. It's the first time that's happened for 12 years, I think it is. Yeah, this is 2022 we're talking about, isn't it? Of course, it's 2023 now. First time it's happened for about 12 years. What was that like, firstly, to welcome the best in the country to your home racetrack at Chargers? And secondly, you know, what's it like then to kind of take them on and win at home? How special a kind of an experience was that event for you?
It was, you know, it was kind of, it's one of the things where, you know, having your home track as the Nationals is, it's a blessing and a curse. And you sort of feel that you've extra pressure, but you're also, you know, you're expecting yourself to be sort of locked in from the get-go and, trying to lead the way for everyone else. And, you know, you don't want to be starting on the back foot at your home Nationals. That's the last thing you want to do. So, you know, it's kind of a pressure feeling. But being very proud in the facility that we've got at Chargers. So it was a nice feeling to be able to show off that, especially when a lot of the guys came up for the Queensland as well. So for them to see that new facility, because the last time we had the Nationals was in 2015 at, you know, in the next to the skate park at Redbank Plains. So having that completely upgraded facility, it was good to sort of showcase this is my home club. Like, you know, it's a great club, and it's nice to sort of showcase that to the country.
Yeah. It was a good weekend. And you're right. The club, the facilities there at Chargers are world-class. It's a fantastic venue and facility. Before we leave the kind of national off-road scene, really there's a couple of things I'm interested in. You know, one is, and I've foreshadowed this earlier, you emerged at the end, almost at the end of an era. You know, people like Josh Payne, Andrew Gillett, Ari Buckler, Matt Griffin, Craig Lawton, these kind of guys who had really dominated the off-road scene since the kind of mid to late 90s.
Yeah.
You know, you were the kind of vanguard of generational change. There were others as well, people like Mitchell Steer and Kyle McBride we already talked about. Now, whilst you're still a young fella, there's a whole bunch of new names who have emerged over the last two or three, 4 years. So Lockie Munday, Jordan Isagen, Lachlan Donnelly, Jared Ment, who's over in the US, Jack McMillan. There's a bunch of young guys coming on. You're not old, but you're clearly the veteran. What are you liking about seeing these young guys kind of grow in stature? And, you know, they're gunning for you, but it also must be interesting to kind of watch and see what you're liking about what these young fellas are getting up to.
Yeah, it's good because we're in sort of a, you know, we're in an era where the cars are changing rapidly. So to also have a generational change in the drivers too, and new drivers stepping up, it kind of works with both. So you sort of learn different things and learn completely different things to what we learnt, you know, 10 years ago. So
tell me a little bit about that. Tell me a little bit about what you're learning to drive modern cars on modern racetracks compared to 5 or 10 years ago.
Probably the biggest things, especially with two-wheel drive, you know, back when we had the rear motor cars and even the stand-up mid-mounts, it was, you know, very much more point shoot. You kind of get into an hairpin, brake weight, flick the car, and then you're on the gas hard. Whereas now with the newer cars, the biggest thing is just keeping the weight transfer and keeping the momentum going. And, you know, that's where it's taken me a little bit longer to transition to, rather than, I know some other guys have found it easier when they've only just started with that, rather than having to kind of change a two-wheel drive driving style to
unlearn some things. Yeah.
I've got my own personal, my setup guide and things that I've learned over the years and all that notes, and I'm starting to have to rework them, just because things have changed in the way the cars work and manage, and learning that off some of the newer drivers and other guys that spend time around the newer drivers, it just gives you a different insight to things. Just different people around always bring different things to the table, especially when we've got such new generation of everything coming through.
It is, you're reminding me that I came back to the racetrack last year after quite a few years away and actually hadn't raced off-road properly since the 90s and picked up a current car and, you know, learned to drive it and all of those things. But fairly recently managed to get a drive of an old rear buggy motor class on a loose, slippery dirt track. And it was like muscle memory. I was like, oh, thank goodness I know how to do this.
Yeah.
And it felt so natural and easy and simple. Whereas, you know, last year I just had to keep working and working at how to figure out how to make these modern cars go. And you're making some sense of that experience for me. So thank you. It wasn't just me being old.
Yeah, no.
What a different thing to do. Yeah. The other thing that's interesting for me, Chris, is that a bunch of those young guys who are emerging, you're actually on a team with. So you're driving a team associated these days, and people like Lockie Monday, Lachlan Donnelly, Jared Ment, and so on, they're on that team with you. So what's the kind of, and we had Andrew Savaggi on the show a little while back, and he talked a little bit about, he manages that team. He talked about it from his perspective. But from your perspective, what's it like to have, you know, these young fellas not only coming after you, but actually on the same team with you? So there's a kind of a sharing of data and information, but there's also that old motorsport adage of the first person to beat is your teammate.
That's interesting. That's definitely always in your mind. It's a good and bad feeling because you know, you're not wondering, is my car capable of being fast enough? Because you know, all the brands have their different takes on things, and I've driven a lot of different brands, and you know, when all these fast guys were running the same car, you're sort of lucky in a sense. You don't have that in the back of your head that is my car fast enough.
There's no second guessing of that.
Yeah, you've got to be fast enough. It's good. We all have very different driving styles. So all the setups do seem to vary a little bit. But still, just sort of hearing some information and sort of clicking with those things and like, okay, well, this driver likes this, you know, where does this sort of sit between? And, you know, Andrew's doing a fantastic job as being the team manager, especially here in Australia, and managing that sort of stuff. And, you know, like for the states and nationals, with setups and information and all that sort of stuff. It is good, good having that. Even for me, look, I'm still learning. Like Adelaide was a massive learning thing for me.
So that's the South Australian Championships earlier this year.
You know, because it was, we haven't driven on a loose track for quite a while. And
certainly not in Brisbane, no.
Yeah. No, and especially with the way the cars are now, it was quite very different. So, you know, a lot of my setup theory kind of went out the window. And, you know, luckily Andrew and Ray had a lot of good ideas and bounced off and, you know, tried little things here and there that just paid dividends. So, you know, having, you know, all of us, you know, we're all fast, and being able just to gauge what each other's doing and what each other likes and dislikes and ideas, it's good. And it's, you know, I had that back in 2014 with Josh. You know, I'd spend, you know, hours on the phone with him at night, just messaging, just going through different things. And, you know, it's nice to have that. You know, we spent a couple of years just working on our own, and it, it just becomes difficult.
Yeah. So 2014, of course, when you were talking there about working with Josh, you're driving for Yokomo at that point. That's right, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mate, I'm keeping an eye on the time. Let's turn our attention overseas for a little bit. You've had the good fortune to run at a couple of world championship events in Utabi in 2015 and China in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
Also New Zealand Nationals and then the Reedy race later on in 2019. Tell me a little bit about that kind of experience of getting to go and race overseas and to kind of run up against, you know, all the people that we only ever see on YouTube or RC websites. You know, what was that first Worlds like at Utabi for you?
Yeah, it's kind of pretty surreal. Really, like meeting some childhood heroes and like you said, guys I'd spent, you know, hours watching YouTube videos of and all that sort of stuff. But just the way the event runs and, you know, we'd never been to an event before where we get given a car on the sign-in day to prep and build. You know, just that whole atmosphere just so different and getting to experience that. It's probably a good thing we did. Actually, no, that was my first international event. I'm starting to think New Zealand was, but New Zealand was a year later. Sorry for that.
Yeah,
but
no, that's 2018, I think. Yeah. That's the notes I've got. Yeah.
2016, I went there for one.
A couple of times. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, just being overseas and different culture, and I was would have only been 19 at the time, I think, from memory. So, I'm still quite young. So, it's just really different culture, and especially going to a place like Japan. It's so culture heavy.
Yeah.
But yeah, just the atmosphere at the event, being around and seeing how the different teams work, and seeing the heroes and everything else is just pretty surreal.
And of course, you're fronting up to a Worlds that's taking place on AstroTurf, which is not something that's common in Australia.
No.
You do well there. You're kind of top 30, top 40 in both classes. How much did that experience, you know, and a little bit more maturity and a little bit more domestic experience help then when you went to China in 2017? You had a sense of what you were going into, I guess.
Yeah, it kind of gave us a good little stepping stone because we didn't really know where to sort of expect or – you know, hope for in 2015. And just going off, you know, what, you know, just talking with Josh about, you know, where hopefully, you know, I could end up and things like that. So, you know, we did better than we expected, you know, but we had some good runs there where I was even higher up. So, you know, it gave us a good stepping stone to work towards. And yeah, it was quite a different end of the scale in 2017 when we went. It was, you know, I'd already been out of the country a handful of times at that point. You know, slightly different culture again to Japan. But yeah, the whole just, I know I really enjoy and relish the opportunity of going to races away from home because you're in a slightly different mindset at that point. You're not having, you know, local things in your head. So you're kind of just solely on the event. So yeah, it was kind of it was good to have a lot of international trips before 2017. Yeah.
I think you're the first person I've spoken to who went to China in 2017. So just tell me a little bit about what was that event like? How well put together was it as an event? You know, and maybe a little bit of a reflection on, you know, how it was for you personally.
It was like going to Yatta Bay Arena was one thing, but then going to this track, you know, outdoors, the facility was insane. Like, it had an on-road track next to the off-road track.
Yeah.
The facility was like, I think it was like 3 stories high, or four stories nearly, basically.
Fantastic.
Is just phenomenal. And then the way the event was run, just a little bit different too. We had different things with scrutineering that year. So it was a little bit of a change there, but, you know, it was quite surreal. Like, you know, it was the first event I'd gone to where I didn't have to marshal in practice. They had paid marshals going out.
Okay.
In practice, the hard hats and everything else, and in the racing we marshaled, of course. But I think it was the first day in practice or whatever. Yeah, we didn't marshal. They just had guys on track. So it was quite sort of, it's just very different in that sense. But yeah, it was the first. I don't know. I think just my age at that point, I was 21 at the time, so I started to see things a little bit differently. And I was also working with a different team at that point with Team Associated and, experience how Brent Tilkey was running the team and running things through there. And, you know, it was very different in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, both were big learning curves in two aspects, in different aspects. And, you know, China was a, pretty sure it was molasses. It was a very treated surface, you know, really high grip, and the jumps were, you know, it was like an 8-scale track built down a little bit for 10th scale, but, you know, the jumps were tricky and it was quite a lot of elevation, and it was very different to drive on to what, you know, we've got here. And also, you know, we had AstroTurf Worlds in 2015.
Still fascinates me that we went to Japan and did an AstroTurf World.
Yeah,
that famous location, the home almost. Your next kind of couple of years later, you don't get to the Worlds, but you do get to the Reedy race. Now that's, you know, it's such an iconic event, outside the World Championship, probably the next most coveted kind of trophy in the world of certainly electric off-road.
Yeah.
Four-wheel drive looked like it was a tough initiation for you from the results I've seen, but two-wheel drive, it really came, you know, you kind of came to the forefront. You picked up a couple of round wins.
Yeah.
You know, tell me a little bit about what it's like to kind of to front up to a Reedy race, you know, as maybe as a guy who doesn't get to do them all the time.
Yep.
How was that experience?
It was quite surreal. It wasn't even something we had even in the books. I remember I get a message from Brent Tilkey, and I think it was December. He's like, oh, do you want to come to the Reedy Race Invitational?
It's the Pope Catholic.
You know, I'm 2 months out, 2 months out from the event, we get the invite. You know, because we realized we couldn't do the Worlds in 2019. So yeah, it was kind of surreal. Like, oh wow, I had, you know, that was when I started to watch a lot more off-road stuff, and I'd watched the Reedy Race for a couple of years, and you know, just kind of the feeling of, oh wow, I'm going to get to race these guys. Cause obviously at the Worlds, it's, if you miss out on the A, you only get one race for the lower mains, and you don't quite get that feeling of being in the big show. Mm. So it was, oh wow, I'm actually going to get a chance to race these guys head to head across both categories for a number of days. Like, it's just, it was quite surreal. And then going there and again, completely different surface. You know, I spent a couple of days at SDRC and running around, and just the eye opener with the different way everything worked. But it was one of the, it was the biggest event I'd done that was the most fun.
Interesting.
It was, yeah, it was, because when you look at it from the outside, you're like, wow, this is a super serious event.
Yeah.
And it does kind of get that way towards the end, but, you know, it was quite fun. At the start, when we're doing the number pullouts through the hats to assign us to the preset numbers for the grids, you know, it was a lot of laughs, and, you know, it was quite fun going through all that and being a part of that. You know, I remember some of the nights, you know, going out food truck and just sitting around and having a chat with guys, especially a lot of the younger guys from Europe, and that as well. So it's quite different to a Worlds. And I'm really glad that, you know, when we got the invite, you know, on short notice, we took it, you know, we took it and ran with it. But yeah, getting to race those guys was something different. After the first race, I was battling for, I think it was like four or five of us, and we're battling for third position in the first race in four-wheel drive. And I came off the stand and I said to Brent, I said, that's the first time I've ever had shakes competing for a third place, but not only that, I had my leg tapping on the floor. I'd never had my leg tapping on the floor in a race ever. Yeah. I'd had handshakes, you know, previously in that, but not like that, not for a third place. It was just absolutely surreal. You know, but yeah, it's just such a different event, but so fun at the same time. It's a shame that, you know, it hasn't, looks like it, you know, might not happen for again or for quite some time, but you know, if it does come back, I'd love the opportunity to do it again, because it's just so fun and getting to work with the team, and you know, especially on, you know, track that they race on a lot, and just kind of being around in that sort of atmosphere again, it's quite nice, and we had a good time, and yeah, it was good.
You've pointed there to it, you know, to one of the challenges, I guess, of being Australian, you know, in terms of racing internationally. And we've seen this through the career of someone like Kyle McBride, who's clearly been a world class driver, but has just been constrained by budget and travel and all of those things. You know, I'm guessing for you, there's probably a bit of, you know, desire tucked away there to have been able to race internationally a bit more often, but it's just difficult from where you live.
Definitely. I mean, even traveling in Australia is expensive. Like, you know, the numbers for us to go to Perth this year's nationals are ridiculous. You know, I love to compete. I love to compete on the big stage and for the big events, and I'd love to get the opportunity to go overseas. You know, unfortunately, my age is a bit of a limitation now in terms of my life here. You know, I've got a full-time job. You know, I can't, you know, drop that and go overseas and spend some time, which would be the absolute dream. I'd love to go overseas and just spend time racing. Like you see constantly in the USA, they have just, you know, there's an event on every weekend or every two weeks. Like, you know, I have to go there for like a month or so and just do like four different race meetings.
It'd be fun.
You know, it is the big limitation with being here in Australia. And not only that, it's the tracks as well. We have such varying tracks, and then overseas is completely different. You know, every event we've been to overseas, it's completely different surface. So, you know, it does make it hard, makes the learning scale harder when you go overseas. And, you know, it's why for this year we're going over six, seven days in advance to spend time at other tracks, just acclimatizing ourselves to the clay, to some sort of indoor clay. So it's quite different and surreal, and it's just kind of, it does make it hard being in Australia when you go to those events, and it's such a huge change.
There are many good things about being Australian and living in Australia, but that is not one of them. So let's talk about that, the 2023 Worlds. You've just mentioned it there. You're heading over. Firstly, how excited are you, you know, about going to do an indoor off-road Worlds in the US? It's, you know, feels to me like it feels to me like a massive event.
Yeah, I think especially with, it was meant to be a Worlds in 2021. You know, COVID hit, obviously, so it's pushed back. So everyone's been itching to get there for a Worlds. I probably wouldn't say that, like, the excitement sort of set in yet. You know, we're still 3 months out. And, you know, we're just sort of starting to get on our preparation. We're probably a little bit behind. But I know probably any event that I do, I don't really get excited until I'm kind of on my way there. It's weird. I don't
already not be sleeping, Chris. I don't know what's wrong.
Yeah. I don't really think about the excitement part of it, but I am looking forward to getting over there and, like, seeing some of the photos from the One Up Cup over the weekend. And, you know, I am looking forward to catching up with those guys, and I haven't seen them since, you know, 4 years. And, and also getting to, you know, we're going to spend 5 days straight on, probably at two different tracks over there. So, it's like we can't do here. We don't do here. You know, I don't get that time to go to the track for, you know, 5 days straight just to run practice laps. So, you know, getting to do that, I'm really keen to do. But yeah, it's, you know, I haven't really thought about too much mentally about it yet. I said we're just sort of starting our preparations now and been focusing a lot on the training side of things this year so far. So, but yeah, I am looking forward to it. It's obviously going to be, it's going to be a massive event. I think they're looking at 180 entries. Yeah, so it's going to be mega, but looking at the, Andrew did a walk through the facilities on the weekend, it looks amazing. And I'm really keen to go and experience a different track over there. And it's an amazing facility. So I can't wait to actually go.
So if I just gently put you on the spot for a moment, you know, you've got some background, you've been as high as B final at the last Worlds you were at in 2017 in China. You know, you are in the prime of your kind of career. You know, we've gone through some of that history.
Yep.
But you're going to this kind of event in the US on a, you know, on quite a difficult track environment compared to what you're used to. How do you go about setting objectives for yourself for an event like that? I mean, what will a successful Worlds campaign look like for Chris Sturdy?
It's a question I've been asked a little bit this year. And, you know, I'll probably turn some heads a little bit with my answer to it. But I'm not really going there with a goal. I've spoken to Dad about this, especially after South Australia, because I went to South Australia with a different mindset. I changed my mindset part way on the way there. And, you know, we set goals for the last few events that we went to, and we sort of hit them, sort of missed them at the same time. But I'm kind of, I want to go there with not so much as a goal, but with a mentality. You know, we spent all last year with the mentality of the Nationals to win. South Australia was more about just going to the event, but about probably about 2 weeks out, I said to Dad, I'd heard some chatter going on around the country and things, you know, post-Nationals and things like that. I said to Dad, right, I said, I'm not going there just to compete and just being a number and, you know, just going to see how high I can do. I'm going there to win. You know, I want that in my mentality. You know, we're not spending all this money to go to an event just to see what we can do, you know, hopefully win, hopefully, you know, just, you know, so I said, Dad, I want to go to the Worlds this year with the mentality of we're going there to win. We're going there to compete for the win. We're going there to a world titles. You know, we're not going to go there to, you know, just make the A or, you know, just finish higher than what we did last time. Go there with the mentality to win. And that's why we're putting a lot of effort. Well, probably more so than we have the last most years to go.
Yeah. Sounds like a no stone unturned kind of an approach.
Yeah. Especially mentally. I'm sort of at that, you know, I've kind of realized that especially last year, just getting my mentality right for these events and making sure that I'm in the right mindset before the event and during the event. And just staying in that mindset that I'm here to win. I'm here to go out there and
yeah, I love it.
Lead the pack.
So what do you do? What is the preparation mentally to kind of put yourself and keep yourself in that mindset, you know, in the lead up to and then through an event and through all the ups and downs of an event, you know, when things go wrong halfway through qualifying or whatever it might be, how do you kind of work to maintain that mindset?
Kind of just, I feel like motivation of you get knocked down, you get back up, and just determination. I know I've done it before and, you know, we've won national titles from being on the back foot and driven our way through and just kind of, you know, it was the Nats last year and I think it was a shocking A1 or A2. I can't remember which one it was in four drive. And, you know, I just said to myself, no, I know I can do this. I've been, you know, fast all weekend. I know I'm on pace. So all I got to do is my job and my job's to drive and just kind of stay in that mentality that, you know, I'm not here to, you know, I hate the feeling of finishing second. I don't want to finish second. But in that aspect as well is I want to make sure if I'm not standing on the top step, I want to make sure I've given it my all.
Yeah.
So if I go to an event and I'm not, you know, and even during the event, if I start to slip and start to think, you know, oh, well, if I get second, I get second. Well, I've already lost at that point. So it's just, you know, trying to motivate myself. You know, you get knocked down, you get fired back up. You know, so much get back up, you get fired up and you go berserk sort of thing. You go out there and you drive even harder and drive even smarter as well at the same time. So I know that's kind of just what I try to do. I've learned a lot through my defeats the last few years and even from bad luck as well that's led to defeats and just learning from that and learning. I know just the feeling of that, of being so close, but to miss out. And I kind of just try to put that into my mind as, all right, I don't want that feeling. You know, I've worked so hard for this. I'm determined to make sure I see it through to the end and see it through as hard as possible.
There's a wonderful colloquial Australian saying that is something to do with, we're not here, something, something, spiders. I'm not saying it, but many of you will know what's in my mind, and it just feels like that's what you're saying. We're not here to mess around.
Yeah,
we are not here to mess around.
And
it's good, beautiful.
Yeah, and I was kind of thinking today as well. We had State of Origin last night. I was kind of thinking, you know, I kind of feel like I try to just put that Queensland mentality, you know, on my back. That, you know, you get knocked down, you're on the back foot, you push even harder. You know, you don't give up till it's over.
I'm trying to debate whether to explain State of Origin to those who are listening from other parts of the world. Suffice to say, State of Origin is one of the most hotly anticipated football matches in Australia each year. Send me a message and I'll tell you more about it. Chris, you've mentioned a bunch of times on the way through your dad. Your dad, Gary, we talked a little bit about his origins, you know, and that background. But tell me a little bit about what the partnership with him looks like now. For the two of you, you know, how do you work together? What happens before and at races? What's the... You know, it's almost unimaginable for you to be there without Gary. You know, you kind of are this duo. Tell me about that relationship.
It's definitely hard going to an event on my own, but I've done it a few times now. I'm sort of, you know, it's it's not as daunting as what it used to be. But you know, I can't praise his work enough. Especially now, you know, I do miss working on the cars as much, and you know, because I moved out of home, so yep. Dad takes on all that. But you know, the work he does is incredible, and there's no way, you know, there's no way I'd be where I am without him. The whole package just works. You know, I'm only as good as, you know, how my cars are prepared, you know, so that's definitely a big thing. And, you know, we, as most probably father sons, we have our ups and downs. We have our arguments. I'm pretty sure everyone's probably seen them. But, you know, that's kind of the whole aspect of, you know, you listen to motorsport drivers and their engineers kind of that role. And, you know, you hear them on the radio yelling at their engineers. You know, it's kind of what me and Dad have sort of gone through, you know, at an event. He knows it, and you know, I probably don't quite see him as my dad at the events. He's my mechanic, he's my engineer, he's my my team boss, he's all that stuff in the background for me, and I'm the race car driver. And that's kind of how we work. So because he's used to that with the motorsport, that's kind of what we do with the big events is you know, Cobb days and that, you'll see me wrenching on the cars and things like that, and even a little bit of state titles and that. But when it comes to things like nationals and worlds and all that, I focus on myself and I do my job, and try to stay relaxed and where I need to be. And he focuses on the cars and making sure that all that is as it should be. And yeah, so, you know, I do feel like we are a good team. When we click, and, you know, bounce ideas off, and, you know, I've learned a lot from him early on. And then now he's learning a fair bit from me, and it's sort of swapped. I learned a lot more of the setup side of things. So I'm more guiding him in that sense of, you know, what I want with the car, for him to put in, rather than so much, you know, 10 years ago was he'd look at the car on track and just make the changes for me, and I'd just go out there and drive it.
Yeah.
You know, whereas now I'm feeding the information back to him more and going, okay, well, this is what I want.
So it's a more complete relationship in that sense.
Definitely. It's definitely more of a two-way street in terms of the information, and like we touched on, the data side of things. So
yeah, so just say a little bit more about that, because that's something I've noticed, you know, just as I watch what you guys do. You're very good at, I mean, record keeping, data analysis. You know, how important is that in the work that you're doing together?
For us, massive. You know, we stumbled a little bit, and like I'd send Dad a setup, put in the car, and, you know, we might lose our way a little bit with setups and that, and then going back and trying to dig through the records is always hard. But at the same time, it's something we've always done, is have a record of everything. You know, I've got every Cobb day will be a brand new setup sheet will be written up at the end of the day. Any practice day, another setup sheet will be written up at the end. So we know what was in the car on what day and what times it was doing and how the car felt. You know, we keep all that. You know, I write in a book after each of the runs of how I felt the car was or how the change was, you know, and we document what we change, and, you know, and there's things he'll do that I won't know about, and I'll go and drive on track and then give him the feedback on it. You know, and sort of blind testing in that sense.
That's also letting you really build a body of knowledge around how things work in different climate or temperature conditions as well, isn't it? Or track conditions, or all of, you know, it's not just about what you've done on the car, but it's about what conditions you're driving in.
Absolutely. We spoke to a few guys at Chargers about it last year with the Queensland titles being in winter, and, you know, the temperature change we get here in Queensland in winter is pretty drastic. You go from, you know, nearly 10 degrees in the morning, or even less than that, to if the sun's out, you know, low 20s. So the temp change is massive. And one of the biggest things that we did was we had three sets of shock absorbers set up for the whole weekend for per car, with different oils in them. And because we had spent the time a couple of weeks earlier testing shock oils in temperatures, and we had a whole book written down of what shock oil was used at what temperature. And, you know, on the day we went through all three sets of shocks, and the car felt exactly the same because we knew what temperature I needed them at. So having that feedback was, like, for the Queenslanders, was absolutely crucial for us last year.
So that raises for me the interesting question, Chris, of, you know, you're very soon going to rock on over to the worlds where you're not going to have the time to do all of that. So how does that data then and all that experience help you when you go to a new racetrack, you know, when you're trying to find setup and direction, you know, at a new place you've not been to before?
It's definitely hard. And that's when, you know, that's when we sort of, you know, lucky being in the team that we are, got a massive pool of information that we can access. So having that is going to be really crucial. But kind of what I'm doing here is because there's no point sort of working on a start setup here, because the track's completely different.
Yeah.
So it's kind of just more about data collection and testing out changes, doing the back-to-back runs on changing things drastically enough that I feel it. And that way I can document it. So when we do go over there, I've got a much bigger knowledge pool of what I need to change to get a certain result out of the car. Okay.
So if I need the front end of the car to do this, I now know I've got these four options. And
Exactly. And there's a few new setup stuff the team's been playing with over in the US for the last 6 months that we played around with a couple of weeks back, and getting that data already. Yeah, you know, like I said, there's a lot of new stuff come out. So a lot to play with.
So one of the really interesting things for me that I wanted to ask you about is that, you know, you and your dad now are starting to try and figure out how to pass on all of this experience and accumulated knowledge. And you've been running some training courses at your local club at Chargers RC. Tell me a little bit about what you're doing in those courses. What sorts of things are you covering or emphasizing, and why are you doing? You know, why are the two of you kind of doing this on your Saturdays?
Been wanting to do it for a while, but you know, last year it was quite hectic with the Nationals was a huge focus for us and the Queensland as well. That was one we wanted to win. Like I said, we're sort of fortunate in the sense that the worlds we can't prep a setup for before we go. So being able to use a little bit of time to do that training side of things, and the way the club's progressing now and the way the racing's been, it feels like a really good time to do it. There's a lot of new faces as well this year. So we, besides the one-on-one training, we did two big training courses. One was beginner orientated. That was covered a lot of the basic sort of stuff, basic driving, basic building techniques, you know, just basic stuff to help out the everyday racer, especially the new guys that, you know, you don't really get, it's hard to sort of get taught a lot of that sort of stuff. And so it was, did that. And then we had a more advanced session, which was probably a lot more theory based, because a lot more about talking about driving techniques and how to apply that, and set up knowledge, and you know, what certain changes do. And mindset was one big thing as well, which I got some really good feedback on from that. But that's kind of how we wanted to separate it, to, because there's a lot of high end races up at Chargers, and there's a lot of beginners, like I said. So sort of felt to get the most out of it for everyone was to spread it apart.
Yep.
And then we've also done one-on-one private sessions,
okay,
which is basically more tailored to the specific driver.
Yeah.
I don't go there with a set plan for the day. It's I talk to the driver about what are they wanting to aim for? You know, which car are they struggling with the most? And then I'll watch them for a run or two, try to gauge, you know, try to study their driving style, their habits, you know, their bad habits, and trying to help them as to understand what those habits are and how to break out of them. So it's a lot more driver specific, and also gives them a chance as well. Like, you know, we can work on their car for them, you know, rather than going over sort of just like a blanket. Okay, well, you know, this does this. Yeah. So try this. We can go, okay, well, you prefer this, you know, you were faster with this in the car. So, yeah, doing that's been good, and got some really good feedback. And kind of blown away by the feedback too. You know, kind of, it makes me feel good that what I'm doing is actually helping the guys, and helping the races. And, you know, the competition up at Chargers is getting tougher and tougher. And it's really good to see that, you know, a lot of the, especially in the stock class, it's just getting fierce and everyone's getting closer and getting better for it. So yeah, it's been good to get that feedback and see the progression of the people that I have done training with and how they're going. And we try to, you know, we don't try to do the sessions as a, you know, you're there for that day, and you know, what you learn in that day is what you learn. But we try to give them stuff to work towards as well. give them ideas to continue working on. So it's not just a one day thing. They can continue getting an understanding of what they can learn for the future as well.
I'm thinking that the true test of how rewarding all this is will be when one of those students beats you in that's probably a little while off, but that'll be a pretty interesting day, a pretty cool day. Yeah, it's been wonderful to see you guys pouring into the club in that way, but also it's a reflection too, isn't it, of the state of mind in the club itself. And, you know, it is a really healthy place at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. Point. And I'm very thankful for the club for giving me the opportunity this year to have that platform and have that sort of voice around doing this stuff. And, you know, they're the ones that approached me to go, "Hey, you know, do you want to look at doing this year?" And, you know, that you know, gave me that platform, and the guys have been so welcoming and supportive of it. You know, coming out, setting up the timing for the training days, and, you know, making sure that everything runs smoothly. You know, and I've got what I need to make sure that those training days run well and things like that. And promotional wise that the club put on the Facebook page as well. So very thankful for them for helping that cause.
Mate, I'm conscious of time. Now I'm gonna whip through a few other topics fairly quickly. So let's kind of treat this as a bit of a rapid fire round. If I throw a few topics at you and, you know, just give me a few kind of quick thoughts. 2014, my understanding is you win the world final for short course trucks in VRC Pro. How much did VRC Pro help you as a training tool? What was it like to do that? You know, tell me a little bit about VRC Pro.
It was a good tool back then, just to mainly learn, build on consistency. And just wheel time as well. I just sit on the couch and knock out laps. But yeah, it was good to win both the short course world titles that year. It's definitely a good learning tool for starting out. I did, however, found that later on, it did start to hinder me a little bit. So it's a good tool in one sense, but probably my best advice I give to other people is don't solely rely on it to help with laps and wheel time in that sense.
Very cool. They're two-time world champion, Chris Sturdy. Thanks for joining me on the show. 8-scale off-road. You mentioned that you'd kind of started down that track a little bit around 2012, 2011, 2012. I think you've dabbled a little bit. I see your name on the entry list for the Asian Buggy Championships coming up soon. Is there a bit of a sense of it within you of wanting to do a bit more in that? Or is it really just a bit of a dabble every now and
then? It's kind of just a dabble every now and then. My kind of focus and desire is on 10 scale. I'd love to do more, to go back and do the nitro. Doing the, you know, the long 60-minute mains is amazing. But, you know, there's a lot of challenges with that. And it's very hard in Australia with the way the Aussie dollar is, especially to do 10 scale and focus heavily on that. And then also dabble in 8-scale nitro too. So, you know, we've got the e-buggy sitting there, so we'll throw that around every now and again, but it'll probably be my only showing this year, and in 8-scale will be the Asian Buggy Championships.
You're looking forward to going head-to-head with people like Alex Bernardzik and Caleb Noble in that class in just a few weeks?
Yeah, no, it's definitely good. It's a good bit of competition to go up against as well. Even though it's a different category to what I normally run, it's still competition and very stiff competition too. So, it'll be good in that sense. I enjoy running around the 8-scale. It's fun. It's different, and catching up with Alex as well. So, no, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun. Scotty Ernst there, and, you know, Scotty Ernst Productions. It's going to be a great event. Looking forward to it.
Fun. Yeah. I'm looking forward to being in the on the podium. No, I'm not.
Not with that attitude.
But it'll be fun. It'll be fun. Oh, it's all right, Chris. I'm okay. I'm well aware of my limitations. Touring car, you had all that background. I think the last time you were at a nationals in maybe 2018, you're on the podium behind a couple of internationals. But is there touring car, you know, there's Team Associated, not active in that category. Is there a little bit of you that kind of still kind of itches for the kind of responsiveness and insane speed of modified touring?
And luckily we kind of get that with four-wheel drive at Chargers.
True.
I'd like to. It is one of those things that's always in the back of your mind. We had so many times that we missed out on state titles and nationals as well. You know, I was glad in one sense I was a top Australian at that 2018 event. So, you know, it was kind of a nice feeling. But yeah, it definitely, the Queensland title for Modify would be one I would like to have another shot at to win, just because we missed out on it so brutally one year. So, you know, we'd like that again, but you know, the on-road scene's a little bit up and down, and yeah, with Team Associated, you know, being my main sponsor, not having the touring car anymore. And I said, my main focus is the Tensco off-road, and that, you know, that's what we build on. And at the end of the day, that's what I'm good at. So, and that's what I feel comfortable in, and I enjoy doing it, and especially I'm enjoying it more and more now, especially in the local club scene too.
Get on to Brent. Tell him you either need a touring car or permission to go back to your roots and run a Shoemaker touring car. no personal bias there whatsoever. Chris, thank you for joining me. It's been a wonderful conversation. My last question for you, I guess, is to kind of cast your mind forward, you know, beyond the worlds. And, you know, you still really are, you know, as I said earlier, you're not an old fella. You're still really in your prime. What's the, you know, what, I guess what I'm interested in is what, you know, you hope for over the next couple of years of RC beyond Hobby Action in September. What's, you know, what's the kind of Chris Sturdy story for the next couple of years look like?
To be honest, I haven't really thought about it too much besides the Worlds and the Nationals. We want to go to Perth.
Yeah.
You know, sorry to Matt Griffin, but, you know, we want to take over that, you know, most national titles. We want that. So that's something we'll continue to strive for till we get it. But yeah, besides that, we kind of just take everything year by year. So I haven't really looked to 2024 yet or beyond that. I know a couple of years ago I was, probably close to probably not so much calling it quits, but taking a bit of a step back. Kind of felt like I refound my fire last year, especially. So
yeah.
I know I'm happy to keep going as long as I can. And I want to stay at the pointy end. Not to be selfish, but that's where I want to be. I just want to keep, I'll keep going for as long as I can. And sorry, Gaz's budget. But yeah, I want to keep going as long as he can as well. So, but yeah, we always take things year by year. So, we'll look to next year when after the Worlds and the Nationals, and then we got the Queensland state titles right at the end of the year as well. So we got a pretty big last, you know, 4 months of the year. So.
Was that just an announcement that I didn't know about?
Oh, I thought that was public knowledge.
Oh, there you go. Oh, you heard it here first.
Public exclusive. Knowledge. Apparently we'll have the Queensland titles in the first week of December, apparently.
All right. We'll do a little bit of journalistic integrity and see if we can confirm that. But stay tuned. Sounds like stay tuned for some information about a Queensland champs later in the year. Chris Sturdy, one of Australia's very best of all time, but certainly over the last 10 years, an extraordinary story of single-mindedness, of focus, of leaving no stone unturned, of a really collective, collaborative, long-term partnership with your dad, Gary. We wish you all the very best for the 2023 Worlds. Reckon I might try and chat to you again either just before or just after or both, but we might talk again later in the year around the World Championship kind of campaign. But now, though, thanks for joining me, and the very best for the next couple of months.
Thank you, and thank you for having me. And hope to see everyone at the track soon.
Thanks, Chris. And there is a chance to kind of come and spend some time with Chris at the Chargers RC Carnival last day of June and first couple of days of July. So if you're in Australia, come on out and have a race at Chargers RC, and then you'll see Chris again, obviously, at the Nationals in Perth later in the year. Sounds like maybe a little sneaky Queensland Championships there. And, of course, for those of you who are listening who will be in and around the worlds, keep an eye out for one Chris Sturdy among the Australian team. Fantastic Australian team being assembled to go to the worlds this year. That's it for now. Thanks heaps for listening, for hanging out with us. Love you to continue to send us your feedback. Let us know what you're thinking of the show, who you want to hear from, what stories you want to tell, or stories you want to hear. That's it for now. We'll see you next week.